That's an interesting thought. We'll talk about the pancreas briefly. You know, the pancreas sits in back of the belly. I once described it in a lecture years ago. It kind of looks like the head of a seagull or a tern. It's got this head and the shaping bill. The head is kind of in the middle of the small intestine, the duodenum, the first part of the small intestine. The pancreas is divided into two components. There's an endocrine pancreas, which produces hormones like insulin and glucagon that help manage and regulate protein, fat, and carbohydrate metabolism. In addition, there's the exocrine pancreas that produces all the pancreatic digestive enzymes, proteolytic enzymes that digest protein foods like trypsin and chymotrypsin and carboxypeptidase. It produces a whole series of lipases that digest triglycerides and phospholipids and fats. It produces the amylases, which digest starch into simple sugars. So it produces a series of enzymes that allow us to break down proteins, fats, and carbohydrates. This was known in Beard's day. Again, we think of 1900 as a primitive time in science, and scientists lived in caves. Trypsin was identified around 1878, I think. By the time Beard matured as a scientist, the pancreatic enzymes, ferments as he called them, had already been identified. He knew what the pancreas did, and he could measure them. And this poor guy used to spend his night times measuring pancreatic enzymes, little specimens of these little animal embryos. And over again, correctly, through meticulous observation, he was able to find that the day the trophoblast changes behavior in every species he observed was the day the embryonic pancreas became active and began producing proteolytic enzymes. He then made another leap of faith. He said if pancreatic enzymes can control a trophoblast, which is a very invasive, aggressive, cancer-like organ, and turn into a very mild, tame, life-sustaining organ, they probably could do the same to cancer. Well, his work on trophoblast and the alternation of generations already caused him enough trouble when he announced to the world at a scientific lecture in Liverpool that pancreatic enzymes represent the body's main defense against cancer. Cancer does not occur in mature cells, but in these trophoblastic nests, and that pancreatic enzyme deficits probably cause these trophoblasts to grow uncontrollably. And the simple, obvious answer to him, it was obvious, is the way you treat cancer is you give it large doses of proteolytic pancreatic enzymes. Seems simple enough. He barely escaped that lecture with his life. The scientific community is not good accepting new ideas. As I've often said, I think it's my own quote, maybe I stole it from somebody, nothing is more frightening to a scientist than a new idea. That's probably the scariest thing a scientist ever has to face. Very scary, I know, I go through it myself. Beard presented his data. Now, fortunately, there were some scientists at the time that were very intrigued by what he said, and the meticulous work, and we're talking 20 years of meticulous, seven days in a laboratory, work that's forgotten. There were people that were interested as scientists and physicians, and they began to work with Beard and began to use pancreatic proteolytic enzymes to treat cancer. Now, this is 1902, 1905, 1907. Other than surgery, there really weren't very good treatments for cancer at that time. Basically, if they couldn't get it out through surgery, they weren't going to get it out at all. So they were willing to try, and Beard himself developed an injectable form of enzymes. At that time, it was thought that pancreatic enzymes, which are proteins like any enzyme, would be destroyed in the gut in the digestive process, and you had to inject them. And he developed his own formulation made by a company called Fairchild, and they worked wonderfully. The first case it was tried on was an army captain with a laryngeal cancer. After a few weeks of this enzyme therapy, the tumor just sloughed off, and Beard actually had photographs. And lest any scientists in the room say, well, back in those days, they didn't know what cancer was. They did. By 1900, pathologists had identified the dozens of different cancers. They knew the difference between a leukemia and a lymphoma and a myeloma and a breast cancer and a colon cancer. They knew the distinguishing characteristics. A lot of contemporary pathology actually depends upon what developed at the time Beard matured. 19th century was a very fertile time in pathology as well as in biological sciences. They knew what cancer was. These were biopsy-proven cases. There was a woman in New York on Madison Avenue, half a dozen blocks from my own office today, who began using Beard's enzymes around 1905, 1906, and reported a whole series of cases. Metastatic breast cancer, metastatic colon cancer, then as today, deadly, invasive, untreatable, incurable cancers, where the tumors would just slough off and die, presented in the medical literature. An explosion occurred. There was a battle both in America and in Europe, all through Europe, about Beard and his crazy enzyme treatment. It seemed as weird to them in those days as it does to my colleagues today. How can something as simple as pancreatic enzymes attack cancer? And then to make it complicated, he was trying to turn humans into plants, saying we had an alternation of generations, or were like jellyfish. The scientific community went berserk. Beard, nonetheless, might have survived for one thing. Madame Curie rose to fame around that period. Madame Curie, as I've said before, was a very beloved figure. You know, she was a very poor immigrant from Poland. While she was doing her PhD at work in physics at the Sorbonne, she lived in a hut in a poor area of Paris. She was married to a famous physicist. She won two Nobel Prizes. Winning one's enough. She won two, greedy woman that she was. And one of the great discoveries was she discovered radium. And she was a great humanitarian, said seriously. She really was looking out for the best of humanity. Nothing more dangerous than a scientist that's looking out for the best of humanity. She discovered radium and said, gee, what a simple, easy, non-toxic way to kill all cancer. Now, she had access to the media. She was beloved. She was one of the first great woman scientists. She came from poverty. She fought all kinds of obstacles, discovered thing after thing. I mean, she forgot more than I'll ever learn. I accept that. Brilliant woman. But she was totally, completely, categorically wrong. She herself eventually would die of radiation poisoning. A whole generation of researchers and medical oncologists who use radiation would die of leukemias and lymphomas caused by the radiation. By the 1920s and 30s, we knew it didn't cure most cancers. It even when the cancer regressed, usually didn't last. It was deadly to the host and deadly to the doctor, that if you used too much, you could kill the host. Used too much, you could kill the physician. It wasn't safe. It wasn't non-toxic. It wasn't curative. It rarely worked. But by that point, Beard was dead and forgotten. Died in 1924, his work totally forgotten. One of the great episodes of biology lost, his work about stem cells lost, his work about alternation of generations lost, his work about the origin of cancers from these primitive undifferentiated cells, would all have to be rediscovered 80 years later. What a waste of time.